Welcome back into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. A little raspier of an episode of the Daft on Draft podcast as I'm trying to figure out what's going on with my immune system here. But we're back after a week 8 slate of games, ready to talk over the top 25, ready to give out our helmet stickers. James, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling great. I feel like this was probably the most eventful college football week of the season so far in terms of draft implications, at least. Like, I normally have, you know, 4 or 5 potential helmet stickers that I kind of choose from. And I mean, I had like 13 players that I could have talked about, and felt like there were a lot of dominant performances and equally as many brutal performances. So a lot of interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah, man, it was an awesome slate of games. Lots to talk through here. Narrowing it down was tough, but again, there was a lot of guys like too that I felt like we could have just given repeat helmet stickers to as well. Yep. And I guess we'll start with that Friday night game, and that'll be Louisville-Miami. Louisville beats Miami. And again, Chris Bell went for 9 catches, 136-2. Like, we're nearing call the family territory with Chris Bell here. 3 straight weeks now where he's just put up dominant production. We've talked a lot about this wide receiver class, man. And again, I came into the season with Chris Bell as wide receiver too. And I mean, he's definitely top 4, but again, those top 4 names, you could outside of Tyson at 1, you could lock him in at 1 for the most part, but you can interchange those other 2 through 4 names and feel pretty okay with it. And Chris Bell has every right to that wide receiver 2 title still after this. Yeah, man. Other news in this game as well is Carson Beck throwing 4 interceptions. So,
yeah. Rest in peace, Carson Beck resurgence year. Short-lived. But yeah, Chris Bell, I mean, I'm with you on this receiver class, just as far as like it being so difficult to stack this top group of guys. I agree. I do have Tyson at 1. I think for him, the biggest concern is just probably average speed, you know? Mm-hmm. But like the growth that Carnell Tate has shown has been phenomenal. And we'll talk about him in detail later. Mekhi Lemon, consistent as ever. And then Chris Bell is just a playmaker. What do you think about the Xavier Leggett comps that have been going around?
I think he does more underneath and after the catch than Leggett has ever done in his life.
Yeah, I gave him a Xavier Leggett like as a low-end comp over the summer. I feel like he's too refined of a route runner for that to really be a valid comp anymore. Like I think he's extremely crisp, creating separation, which feel like kind of the opposite for Xavier Leggett. So yeah, there's very similar body types and athletes for sure.
For sure. Yeah. I don't know what to do with him because I don't think he's as physical or as natural at the, like, stacking and bodying people as AJ Brown. And that's another one you'll see a lot. Like, I don't see the AJ Brown one either, but I don't know what to do with him. I don't know what to call him. But he's a damn good player, a really fun player.
Reuben Bain had sort of a quiet week, not in terms of like not winning, but Louisville did a good job kind of eliminating him from the game. So don't think that really impacts his draft stock, but I don't know. Conversation could get interesting. Him and Arvell Reese.
Hey, I saw a tweet that was like, we might be approaching the territory where the best players in this year's draft class are a linebacker and a running back. And yeah, we're getting there. We're getting there.
I mean, I almost had Jeremiah Love as one of my helmet stickers. And
that's just like too obvious of one, right? Though, right? Yeah.
And like Jadarian Price was one of my alternates. They got a nasty running back duo.
Yeah, they do. All right, Minnesota-Nebraska. Minnesota pulls off the upset here over the number 25-ranked Nebraska Cornhuskers. Notable NFL draft prospects here. Anthony Smith had 2 sacks. Darius Taylor had 148-1 on the ground here. I couldn't name you a single Cornhusker player that I'm like, yeah, that's a draftable player right now in 2026.
I can name you some players that aren't draftable.
Yeah. Yeah. That leads us into Saturday. Ohio State, Wisconsin, 34-0. Luke Fickell's time is going to be up by the end of the season. I think the boosters are just trying to eat a little
bit
more of
that. Did
you see
he's not – he isn't letting NFL scouts into Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm. Apparently he denied it in a press conference, but yeah, not great stuff. Not great.
And like for a program like Wisconsin, where you're talking about, you know, guys trying to get a chance as UDFAs, like it's not, I don't know. That just seems extremely messed up to me.
Those are the guys who need it the most. Like, yeah, those are the guys who need that access the most. It's very similar to the Belichick stuff. It's like this is hurting your program. It's not helping your program in any way. Yeah, that's bizarre.
It's like no one's going to watch Riley Malman's tape and draft him.
Right.
But like they might go to Wisconsin and hear that he's a really hard worker and like move him up the UDFA board.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Same with like Vinny Anthony, those kind of guys.
Yeah.
Rico Hallman, those kind of guys need that access that Luke Fickell's not giving them. From an Ohio State perspective, this is where Call the Family's coming off the board already, and Carnell Tate went for 6-1, 11, and 2 touchdowns. Like, I think, especially in this draft class, we're very firmly locking him into round one at this point. And again, we talked about all those other wide receivers ad nauseum when we talked about Chris Bell, and I want your opinion on this as well. Carnell Tate feels like the one that could push Tyson at some point for wide receiver one as the season continues.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like every week Carnell Tate is showing us a new version of himself. Like he ran a comeback against Wisconsin that I think is probably the cleanest like stop out type of route that I've ever seen him run. And like the ball skills have just become ungodly. Like he catches everything. Had that highlight touchdown on the deep post, but a couple other really nice contested catches. If you want to loft him a really difficult ball on the sideline, he will get both feet in bounds consistently. He is, I mean, forget about like receiver skill and route running and catching and all that stuff. He appears to be engaged in the offense this year. Like he runs routes like he's expecting to get the ball, which is, you know, a huge development from last year. That shows up as a zone route runner. He's so precise with his landmarks. It shows up in the run game, given a lot more effort as a run blocker this year. So I can't say enough about all the improvements that Carnell Tate has made, and we're continuing to see growth. So that's why I don't want to put a cap on him. Like when somebody takes a big jump like this, I don't want to rush to then like define their new ceiling. I'm just, right. You know, I'll let it play out.
Yeah, for sure. Defensively for Ohio State, Arvell Reese, another sack, another two tackles for loss. Caden Curry, a sack tackle for loss. Kenyatta Jackson, sack tackle for loss. So the guys who could declare, I mean, Curry's out of eligibility.
You know who I thought played great for Ohio State's defense was Caden McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was his best game.
A name we're repeating a lot down the stretch here as well. So that's always what I like to pay attention to. Who are these guys that we're repeating over and over again? Because those are the guys that are like, all right, it's time to lock that in a little bit. Yeah, Sonny Styles had an interception as well off of a deflection in this game too.
They're,
flashed a little bit of ball skills.
They're playing Caleb Downs in some press man.
Yeah.
Like, I think we've gotten maybe 15 man coverage reps over the last 4 weeks maybe, which is more than he had last year. So that's good to see. I feel like getting a little bit cleaner of a picture on him.
Yeah, for sure. This team's loaded. If they went back to back, I wouldn't be shocked. Have you watched any Will Kaczmarek blocking reps?
No.
Okay. If you're into some blocking tight end reps, which is probably like a late in the winter kind of write up, but Will Kaczmarek, one of the better blocking tight ends in the nation. He's a lot of fun. He caught a nice little pop pass for a touchdown in this game too, so he got rewarded. One catch, 2 yards, and a touchdown. But
I gotta check him out.
All right, moving on here. Indiana, Michigan State. This one looked like a close game early on. Childs was kind of going shot for shot with Mendoza there early. He was like 16 of 18 in this game before it faded off in the second half there. But again, we came in last at the end of last week saying, like, we want to see Mendoza light it up, something more than just RPO speed outs. This game had a little bit of everything. He hit a nice fade ball to Surratt down the sideline. He threw a nice, beautiful post over the top. He ripped a couple over the middle shots off the hashes as well. So, like, this is kind of that game that we were hoping to see from Mendoza, and he didn't disappoint. Again, as efficient as they come, 24 of 28, 320 or 332 and 4 in this one as well.
He basically went down the shopping list and, like, showed us one of each. He had a backside dig. He had that sail route to Omar Cooper. Omar Cooper had an outstanding game, by the way. Finally caught the deep post. Outside of that, I mean, he really checks every box. We should talk about Elijah Surratt, because I'm still on the boat that Cooper is a better prospect than Surratt, but Surratt has definitely moved me a little bit over the last few weeks, and I think my updated take would be just that they're both good prospects, but I prefer Cooper.
Yeah, I think so too. I think with Surratt, when we start talking about the NFL, though, like, do you think that he could play XZ at the NFL, or like X at the NFL level, or do you think he has to play Z slot?
No, I was looking up, top speeds for this year, and Elijah Surratt's highest speed reached 18.57 miles per hour is the second lowest in this receiver class, to only Jacoby Lane. And that shows up on tape. Like, he doesn't pull away from corners in man coverage, which is why they throw so many back shoulder fades.
Yeah.
But he is a really, you know, smooth, efficient route runner for his size. He has reliable hands on open targets, but I would want a 6'2" receiver to be a little bit better at the catch point, winning through contact. But yeah, I mean, he to me is like a high in three, maybe low in two, that you take like late third round, third, early fourth.
Yeah. It's kind of where I'm at as well. And again, if you do stick him in the slot, I feel like he's going to be the kind of receiver that'll catch you 70 passes in a season with 50 of them being on third down. Like, that's the kind of vibe that he gives off to me for sure. But Omar Cooper, I'm glad we brought him back up, circled back there a little bit as well, because he is doing a little bit of everything. He's a playmaker with a football in his hands too, man. He's a lot of fun. You were at this game.
I was. It was, you know, Indiana's got a nice cozy stadium. Had a rain delay, so I got to really, really get a good look at the stadium. But yeah, it was pretty fun. It was stress-free after the first 10 minutes. Still good to see Chiles bounce back, though, after some rough games the past couple weeks.
I know that he has allegiance to Jonathan Smith. Jonathan Smith's one who recruited him at Oregon State. I feel like he's got to go somewhere with a little bit more support around him, man.
He's already gotten the under center experience on tape. He could go to a super spread offense and still have more under center snaps than any college quarterback that he's competing against in the draft. I think it is like valuable experience that he's in kind of a pro style system. I mean, it's jarring to see a quarterback under center in college and like run, you know, seven step drop play action. But yeah, I would agree. He's one of several players that I really want to transfer.
Yeah.
This offseason.
Yeah. Again, Oregon, go to Oregon.
Him and Lenore Sellers.
Yes. Those are the top two for sure. For sure. For Mendoza here, we've got UCLA, Maryland, Penn State, Wisconsin, Purdue. So that Penn State game, I mean, UCLA could be kind of tricky this upcoming weekend as well, the way they've been playing. Three straight wins in Big Ten play here. So we'll see how that goes. That's at home. So, I mean, they should be fine in that game. But the Mendoza first round, almost lock status. Unless, like, the wheels completely fall off here, like, this guy's going to go first round. And again, he could be the first quarterback off the board. Like, that's what we've been talking. This is what I've been talking about since April. And he's come in. I think he's even blown the doors off of my expectations of what I thought he would come in and do this year. Again, Penn State's really that last top defensive hurdle to get through here. And that's November 8th until we get into a potential Big Ten championship game against Ohio State, assuming Ohio State finishes strong as well, and then into the playoffs. So, It's been awesome for Mendoza.
Yep. I think, you know, the problem for Mendoza is that I would say a very similar thing about two other quarterbacks this week. Like, I think two quarterbacks definitely had their best performance of the year. Mendoza, Dante Moore. Ty Simpson had another really good week. So it's tough competition for QB1 for sure, but Mendoza is definitely impressed.
Can we talk about, like, this is why I will never buy into the like, people are just like, oh, this is a rough year to need a quarterback. It's like, by what standard? Like, I could talk about four different quarterbacks right now, tonight, today in this episode, where I'm like, well, three for sure, Mendoza, Moore, Simpson, who I'm like, these guys are all playing very high level football. Like, by what standard is this a weak class? Because there's, like, we're not talking about SEC quarterbacks at the top. Well, I mean, Ty Simpson, but like, because there's one SEC, like, is that why? Because the guy we talk most about has an Indiana jersey on. Like, by what standard is this a bad class?
Yeah, it's all the names that people knew heading into the season, that have disappointed, and so, you know, just haven't, I don't know, had the interest to look at other teams. I guess the thought that I had that's kind of similar is, like, after watching the quarterbacks this week, if given the option between betting on, like, a 2-year starter at quarterback taking a jump that we've, you know, all been waiting for, or this unknown, like, high 4-star or 5-star recruit that's been sitting for 2 years, nobody's thought of him since he committed, and he's just going to be the starter and, like, we know nothing about him, I'll take that guy over the guy that we're, like, you know, constantly hoping, cough cough, Drew Aller, you know, can take a step. Yeah, just give me the new shiny item, the mystery box. It could be anything.
I love it. All right, Texas A&M, Arkansas. This is a game that I didn't get caught up on tape wise. I don't know if you got this game in or not.
Oh yeah, I watched both sides on this.
Okay, so I'll lean on you here again. Names that predominantly interested in from a Texas A&M perspective are Cassius Howell, racked up a million more pressures in this game. Chase Bezontis is a name that we're interested in, and Casey Concepcion are probably the big three in this game, right? And Willie.
Yeah, Cassius Howell, another 8 pressure performance for him. He is just, it's incredible. Even when, like, I think I'm about to skip the play because, like, he doesn't have the angle, it's going to be a wasted rep. Oh, nope, he wins the corner. It's like, it's just inevitable that he's going to find some way into the pocket. He is, from the people I've charted, he is the highest inside counter rate edge rusher in this class. But yeah, another good week for Cassius Howell. I thought Will Lee played really well outside of kind of a ticky-tack penalty. He had this rep on, like, third and short, chasing down a drag, and he just planted the dude in the ground. Definition of physicality. So actually a couple other things stood out for Texas A&M's defense. Tyler Onidem, transfer, I believe, from Iowa State, played 4 years there. I think he's a really solid, like, early day three interior rusher. I definitely like him better than Albert Regis, who I know has some draft hype. And then the other thing defensively is Torian York, like, has to be injured because he looks unplayable after, like, he had a great week a few weeks ago and kind of put himself on my radar. I've watched him the last 2 weeks and it's, like, not even UDFA tape. So I'm wondering if he's injured, cause he moves slow, like, doesn't see anything, which is kind of the opposite of what I saw from him earlier in the season, like Auburn game. I think Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm. What was his tracking data last year before coming into this stuff?
It was like 51st percentile speed, 38th percentile acceleration.
Makes sense.
For a 5'10", 227-pound player. Not great.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense to me. David Oki, again, didn't get any snaps in this game for Arkansas.
Yeah, man. I guess my Excel file takes so long to save.
Is he still hurt?
I might have to just remove him from my board, start cleaning it up.
It's, yeah. We came into the, like I came into the season really high on this guy, and he's just not getting on the field. It's bizarre.
It's weird. He played in such a, it's not like gimmicky. It's just a really unconventional scheme at Abilene Christian. Like I've never seen a defensive
games
scheme
on
that runs
every
more
snap.
Stunts.
Yeah.
Like the so few one-on-one like reps where you are running into the gap that you're aligned in front of pre-snap. So maybe, you know, maybe that just kind of, it just didn't translate and he needs to be like moving forward. I don't know. But yeah, definitely disappointing because he was a top five defensive tackle for me heading into the year. Mm-hmm.
I also wonder, I want to look something up here. He doesn't have any more eligibility left unless he redshirts this year. He's only played in three games. So I wonder if maybe he's saying, I'm not playing anymore
probably.
This year.
Yeah.
And he's just going to punt.
I mean, you got to do that. People talk about it like it's some selfish thing. Like
it's not.
You have 4 years to play for your whole life. Like you got to do what's best for you.
Yeah. So I wonder if he's maybe hitting the portal again and trying somewhere else next year. But I wonder if we're going to see him again this year at all. And he's just going to take this redshirt year and go back at it again in 2026. Quincy Rhodes, probably time to fully punch on him till 2026 as well. What did you think of Chase Bezontis in this game?
Yeah, Chase Bezontis had... So, I love him in pass pro. He just... Mm-hmm. I can't stop thinking about... You said fee-fi-fo-fum athlete to describe someone. I forget. That's
Austin Barber.
That's kind of what I think. Like, whenever they pull him, I'm like, oh, here we go. And he inevitably trips, like, in some new way. But... like just one-on-one pass pro, this dude is a beast. Awesome hands, great anchor, pretty good slide quickness. I really like Chase Bezontis.
I do too.
And Armaj Reed Adams scares me because he is so like boom bust on a play-to-play basis, but the highs on his tape are very enticing. So I still am holding out some hope for Armaj Reed Adams.
Mm-hmm. All right, Georgia Ole Miss. This feels like a top 10 game where I'm like, do we have any prospects to talk about at all?
I watched Lawson Lucky's targets, but I haven't gotten to this game yet.
Yeah, we've talked about the Georgia defense ad nauseum, and then they just let up 35 more points. So like,
yeah,
I continue to think Oscar Delp is a better player than the production. Is like my biggest Georgia takeaway, but like. I've got nothing to talk about from this game.
I still need to watch Zachariah Branch because Mel Kiper had him in the top 25.
I just don't think the guy's declaring, man.
But yeah, I mean, every time I've watched him, he's just been like another gadget guy.
I agree. And again, I don't think he's going to declare. I mean, he's got 362 yards and two touchdowns. Like, we're looking at a guy who we're saying he's going to have 750 yards and four touchdowns as a gadget and saying that guy's going to declare. Yeah. I don't think so. All right, Tennessee, Alabama. I did watch this game here. I thought this was Caden Proctor's best game of the season.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he still gave it up through the chest a little bit more
than
I would like.
Rough.
But, yeah, he bounced back. His foot quickness looked exceptional in this game. Even vertical setting in setting 45, I thought he looked really good in this game. I continue to be really blown away by Jeremy Bernard's just like refinement savvy as well. Isaiah Horton kind of the same way. Like I think Isaiah Horton's becoming a more refined player week by week as well, which it's unfortunate that in that wide receiver room, he's getting like the fourth most targets of those guys. But I really do like Isaiah Horton as well. Again, the Ty Simpson conversation is where we're, you know, going to spend a lot of energy because, again, just relentless middle of the field thrower. There was even like a deep, I think it was a deep post. It might have been a slot fade. I think it was a post, though, where the receiver kind of slowed up, and I thought the landmark was beautiful on it as well. It should have been another big chunk play for him there as well. But another spotless game for Ty Simpson as well in this one. The rep in the end zone where he is kind of on the move, getting chased down, comes back, resets his feet, and just throws it like, and then finds his check is, it's like that easy. It's like the stuff that's like not overly flashy if you're like looking at a box where like, oh wow, he threw to his check down, right? He threw to the tight end leaking out, but it's like, no, that's high level stuff. It's the stuff that I geek out about. So he's
there,
still doing...
there was another one standing in his end zone to Ryan Williams on that deep over where he pinned it on the money. Like that was flashy.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed by Ty Simpson, man. There are several NFL quarterbacks that are playing college football right now. Ty Simpson is one of them.
I agree. Again, I will repeat that. You could not tell me this is a bad class. Tennessee-wise, Chris Brazel started out the game hot.
Well, wait, can I say something about Caden Proctor?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
So, yeah, I agreed. His best game, I saw, like, you know, he graded out well, so I'm going into it like, okay, we're getting a good Caden Proctor game. I think one of the first reps takes it through the chest. I'm like, seriously? Even the good games we can't anchor? So that was the one bad rep, and then after that, I mean, it was lights out. He, on one of the touchdown runs, he picked up a Tennessee defender and threw him into another Tennessee defender. His hands were outstanding. I mean, he shut down Joshua Josephs, who's a really skilled pass rusher. So, yeah, Caden Proctor back on the 2026 menu for sure.
I think so as well. He's still a player I'd be terrified to select in the first round.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, still a player I'd be really terrified to select. But Alabama, it looks like they're going to be playing deep into the season. So we're going to have a lot more quality opponents here. Again, with these SEC guys, the evals write themselves. So,
and Jeremy Bernard, you know, showed more in this game, I think, after the catch than I've seen from him. And I know there are like NFL draft limitations. I just continue to be so impressed by Parker Brailsford. And like, I'm not a complain about PFF grades guy. I've watched every Bama game for the past, you know, however many years, and like every single time, Parker Brailsford has like a 58, and then he doesn't allow any pressures and pancakes like 10 people. It's the most puzzling thing to me how he consistently grades out so average, and then the tape I just think is always awesome. So yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
I felt the same way about Arvel Reese this season. Like, if you looked at Arvel Reese's PFF grades, it's like outside of Ohio and Grambling, the two lower level competition. It's 62, 55, 66, 64, 65, but it's like, and especially his run defense grades against Washington, Minnesota, Illinois, which I thought were some of the more impressive run defense reps, 60, 63, 56. It's like, what?
Well, and I just did a video on Arvel Reese, and throughout the process of making the video, I organized all the clips into like, you know, coverage good, coverage bad, all that stuff. So I'm very aware of all of the bad reps that exist on Arvel Reese's tape this year, and it doesn't compute how he like dominates every block that he faces, gets like five stops, you know, a couple pressures, a sack, and then like doesn't have very many negative plays and grades out as average.
Yeah.
So
I agree. All right. Arizona State, Texas Tech. Baron Morton did not play in this game. Arizona State upsets Texas Tech. The Big 12 every year, man, just cannibalizes each other. It's just like every team just beats the crap out of every other team. Again, no Baron Morton makes a difference here, but Jordan Tyson was Jordan Tyson. I thought Keith Abney was Keith Abney. David Bailey was David Bailey. The players that needed to play well played well, I thought, in this game.
Yeah, I've got a Texas Tech player that I'm going to get to, but I was very impressed with Jordan Tyson in this game. Despite not being that efficient, I think he had like 16 targets. Yeah, 16 targets, 10 receptions, 105 yards, and a touchdown. There were a couple big plays that were like difficult contested grabs that he wasn't able to come down with that he's come down with before. But what was impressive to me about Jordan Tyson is how consistently he got open on basically every rep that he wasn't targeted. Like I think he ran maybe like 7 or 8 deep outs and got wide open on every single one. It'll be interesting to see what he runs, but I think as an intermediate separator, I'm just such a huge fan of Tyson's game.
Yeah, for sure. Same here. Again, came into the season as wide receiver one. We have no reason to have moved off of that at any point this season. Did you watch Keith Abney at all? I thought he was.
No, I'm going to get to him.
I thought he was a gnat in coverage again. And then he had a couple really nice like triggers downhill and making tackles like near the line of scrimmage as well. Yeah, I thought he was really good in this game. I like the Texas A&M or Texas Tech receiver Coy Eakin. I don't know if you watched Coy Eakin. I watched him a little bit over the summer. He's the redheaded receiver, the white redheaded receiver. But he's the one who had that punt return that set him up into position to score the go-ahead touchdown late in the game as well. Had five for, and he's the one who caught that slot fade in the corner of the end zone in double coverage too, for them. But again, I don't know if he's going to declare or not. Texas Tech has so much freaking money to throw around that he might go back to school. But I do like Coy Eakin quite a bit there too. Oregon Rutgers, again, we can talk about it being Rutgers, but this is for a young player like Dante Moore who faced his first bout of adversity against Indiana. Like, this is the bounce back game that you wanted to see from him. He threw the pick that on probably a stick that he shouldn't have thrown, but finished 15 of 20, 290 and four touchdowns in this game. And some absolute like seeds, like the seam ball to Sadiq is gorgeous. He threw that deep post to DK Moore as well down the field. Like,
sick so route by DK Moore on that.
It was. And he's a true freshman. That blows my mind. Yeah. But so this was the bounce back game for Dante Moore as well. We had talked about Kenny and Sadiq's production needing to take an uptick. And in this game, they kind of force fed him, had 4 for 80 and 2 touchdowns in this one as well. So overall, I mean, great game.
Do you want to just jump into my first helmet sticker and then we can pick back up with the game recap while we're on Oregon?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Yeah, so I mean, Dante Moore is my first helmet sticker. Definition of a bounce back game. It's tough because, you know, Rutgers obviously is not very good, but I do think this pretty much makes up for the Indiana game, with the one caveat that as long as the terrible pocket navigation that showed up in the Indiana game doesn't show up on the rest of his tape. I'm back on the Dante Moore train. I mean, this game was better than anything he's done all year. The precision throwing to the sideline, especially on the run, is pretty incredible. He is, I just feel like he sees everything. Like, I, so few plays where I'm like, oh, you could have hit this. It's like he's, you know, experiencing the defensive coverage developing at like half speed, the way that he just reads it so consistently. So yeah, Dante Moore, I think top 5 to 7 pick if you know, the first half of the season, if you just extrapolate that. The other thing that I wanted to highlight though in this helmet sticker was Kenyon Sadiq, who kind of mentioned last week. I was like, are we getting too ahead of ourselves having him in the top 10 12 15, whatever. I still think like that's a valid conversation you could have, but he had by far his best performance of the year, really kind of like in a rival game for him. And he contributed in the passing game and as a blocker. That's, you know, he is a little bit undersized, although he's filled out quite a bit, but he punches above his weight class in the run game for sure. And then you see like on that touchdown, just the seam stretching speed, great full extension catch on that one. So yeah, shout out to Dante Moore, Kenyon Sadiq. Also Isaiah World had a some crazy run blocking reps in this game.
It's about time he had a pretty decent game of tape out there as well for Isaiah World.
I considered him as a helmet sticker, but it's like that sends the wrong message.
Yeah it does. I also want to mention with World, we text about this off air. It's also the most that Moore, or not Isaiah Ward, but Dante Moore, it's also the most that he's done with his legs all season long.
Oh, yeah. Well.
He had a designed run that he picked up probably 20 on. He had a scramble he picked up 20 on. Just, like, consistently extended a little bit more and then even took off and run in this game. It, like, to me, it's so reminiscent of, like, 2022 C.J. Stroud, where we're like, why is this guy like, there's clearly green grass. Like, why is this guy not running and picking up chunks with his legs? And then he finally starts to do it. And you're like, you've always had this ability to do it. Why are you not doing it? It has that very much same kind of feel to me with Dante Moore this year.
And like kind of Ty Simpson too. I feel mm-hmm. like he did some more with his legs, converted a key fourth and short at the end of the game. So yeah, I think both of those guys are adequate or better athletes. Like I don't worry about their movement skills at all.
Vanderbilt LSU. I don't have much to talk about.
Another great Mansoor to Lane game.
Another Mansoor to Lane game. Yeah, like that's the highlight of LSU at this point. Like, again, the 19 of 28 for 225 and two is just like a standard Ness game at this point. As long as he doesn't have any turnovers, that's where you're like, all right, that's fine. Because he has been pretty prone to do that over the past few weeks as well. But outside of that, man, another pretty meh Stowers game, 3 for 32. I've said it for a while now, but like, get Xavion Thomas the ball more. He had that awesome screen that he took 62 yards to the house, made a bunch of people miss, and then he took off. He's got some freaking jetpack boosters, man. He's fast. So I want them to keep getting Xavion Thomas the ball. But again, there's just so many wide receivers. We talk about it every week. It's so hard. Other notable players that we've talked about on the podcast before, AJ Holsey, 9 solo tackles, 13 total tackles, a pass defended in this game as well. That's about it. And then Mansoor to Lane, obviously.
Yeah, I have not watched this game yet, so I don't have anything to add.
Yeah. One of my bigger takeaways from this is that I feel pretty bad for Harold Perkins as well. Based on like what the expectations were as him as a freshman to what we're kind of sitting at now, it's like at his size and at his kind of niche, like I don't know if I would feel comfortable taking this guy before the fourth round, like before day three.
He got like pump faked into thinking he was a top 10 draft pick. I feel like
he did.
Mm-hmm. If he bought the hype that people were saying from his freshman year.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to skip over Georgia Tech Duke because we're 40 minutes into this thing. And I can't name you. I mean, Brian Parker is about the only player I could name you on that, and Chandler Rivers, but Notre Dame USC 228 for Jeremiah Love, man. Yeah, he is who we thought he was. Just like
he is. If I had to say a superlative for Jeremiah Love, I think he's probably the best running back I've scouted at setting up blocks. Mm-hmm. You know, when he's got a blocker in between him and the defender, he knows how to steer them, kind of manipulate the angles, and then run right off the blocker's hip. Into open grass. Just so impressed with the tempo, pacing, patience of him on gap scheme runs. And then they put in Jadarian Price, and like, this dude might be RB4 or something in this class. I like Jadarian Price a lot more than pretty much every other running back that I watch. Yeah.
Notre Dame fans will tell you that the thing with Price though is that he can't catch and he can't pass protect. So he's pretty. To me, Jadarian Price reminds me a lot of, I think I said this last week, of Zamir White coming out of Georgia like a few years ago, where he was like that change of pace to James Cook. And all he really did was like run really fast in a straight line. Like when he hit a hole, he hit a hard. To me, Jadarian Price has that Zamir White kind of feel to him.
Yeah, that's not a bad comp.
From a USC perspective here, Jacoby Lane led the team in receiving. I watched the game though, and I wasn't like overly moved by any of Jacoby Lane's movement skills or anything like that in this game still.
He is so slow.
Yeah.
Really good player, but like he's a tight end in terms of speed.
Yeah. Mekhi Lemon, they had Leonard Moore following him all game, which is probably the right move. Leonard Moore is probably next year's CB1 coming into the summer, like early CB1. Mekhi Lemon had 4 for 76, had a fumble in this game that he lost as well, but still a pretty productive day, even though it's not like the production we're used to for Mekhi Lemon. We probably at some point need to have a conversation about fun college quarterbacks versus NFL draft prospects, because the Jaden Maiava NFL draft hype is getting louder, and it's just not something that like I sit with in terms of like an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I'm totally with you.
Yeah. So but that's probably for another day. We'll hold on to that conversation. Oklahoma, South Carolina, and again, the conversation here surrounds John Mateer and Lenora Sellers, who I think both just very blatantly and obviously need to go back to school at this point. Like, the tools are fun for both these guys, but the down-to-down efficiency is so brutal. And again, I'm just still waiting for Sellers to prove that he's that guy that elevates his team.
Yep.
Like, at what point is this going to come along? And again, it just might be a case where he needs to get the hell out of South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, it's the worst offensive line in the SEC, mm-hmm. and he's at a constant disadvantage every single week. And I don't say that as an excuse, because I think even if he was playing behind a great offensive line, I think there's still a chance that, you know, the outcome is he's not ready, goes back to school. But yeah, he's got to get some protection. And yeah, just like go to Miami.
Yeah. Go to Miami, go to Oregon, one of those two. Yeah. They'll pay you big money.
Hey, go to Indiana.
Go to Indiana, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I feel very similar to Sellers as I do to Chiles, like almost across the board. And I've kind of like, I've already punted Chiles to 2026. But like,
Chiles to 2026 the second I watched him.
Yeah. But I think I'm really nearing that territory with Sellers. And I'll continue to chart Sellers because he is hyped up and the tools are obvious, like 1.1 tools, but like, man, it's getting rough out here. Other NFL drafty kind of things. Again, Nick Harbor is not worth talking about in terms of NFL draft this year. I thought that, Halton, the defensive tackle Halton had a good game. Grayson Halton had a good game for Oklahoma. And this one had a sack, tackle for loss as well. I think Oklahoma's got some dudes that I'm really excited about next year. Now we're not ready to talk about this year, but like the linebacker Kip Lewis, I thought was all over the place too, but like that's a guy we'll talk about next year. R. Mason Thomas had a sack and a half and a tackle for loss in this game as well. R. Mason Thomas is a guy that I kind of have to cap out as well, of my expectations of a draft slot for him though as well, just given the body type, the arm length, and I think he's fairly he's not David Bailey bad against the run, but he's fairly DPR-ish in my opinion as well.
David Bailey had the best game of his career in run support Saturday.
Yeah,
not to dispute your point, just as a side note.
Yeah. All right. Utah BYU. I did not get a chance to watch the tackles in this one.
Spencer Fano. Oof.
Oh, boy. Will a real offensive tackle rough, please stand up? Yes, please.
All of the development that could have potentially happened at offensive tackle went to receiver.
Yep. Every ounce of it.
That's what we're left with.
Oh, boy. John Henry Daly had another sack in this game.
Yeah, I saw he was productive. I need to check him out. I really liked him last week.
I did too. I watched a little bit because somebody told me about the BYU left tackle, and I checked it out. I was like, yeah, this guy's he's a good athlete, probably a day three player. But John Henry Daly blew straight through his chest on a rep, and I was like, oh, yep, we're still here. I really like LJ Martin, the BYU running back, man. I'm a big LJ Martin fan. Again, the top gear is not there. But he is a menace to try to get to the ground, and I think his eyes are good enough to be that, you know, 5-6 yards on early downs kind of back, and I think that plays at the NFL level.
Have you watched any of the BYU linebackers this year?
Isaiah Glasker? No, I haven't. I haven't peeked at Glasker much this year.
Yeah, they got Glasker and Jack Kelly, but I haven't watched a snap of BYU football.
Yeah, me either. No. Again, BYU is a school. It's like now that we're in Big 12 play, that's when we start to turn. Like this is like the Holy War is a resume game. So I'll turn on this and write up a little bit of the reports from this game for sure. Missouri Auburn. I watched this game, dude, and this game was kind of a little bit of a heavyweight fight in the trenches.
Oh, yeah.
I thought.
I saw Chaplin played well.
He did. It was definitely his best game of the year. Keldrick Faulk was unblockable against the run in this game as well. Like, I thought he was consistently in the backfield against the run in this game as well. There are some Caden Green fans out there, and maybe Caden Green is a better guard, but that dude's absolutely not a tackle. It was rough.
I need to watch him.
For him.
I liked him a decent amount at guard last year. Have not tuned into his tackle tape, but now that he's got two games against good competition, Alabama and Auburn, definitely need to check out the Missouri offense because, I thought he was pretty promising at guard.
Zion Young, 2 sacks in this game. He also got caught on a hot mic at the coin toss at overtime. It was amazing. So you had brought up Damon Wilson a couple weeks ago. I watched him last week and I watched him this week, and I haven't been overly moved by Damon Wilson.
Yeah, I don't think he played very well last week. I kind of shouted him out, and then I've not been as impressed with his tape against better competition. So.
Yeah, he had 2 sacks in the Bama game, but they were both against the right tackle, who was a turnstile in that game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the 1 sack against Bama was really nice, but again, clear difference in competition, left versus right side.
All right. We are going to skip to the last game here. The 24th ranked team, Cincinnati, beat up on Oklahoma State, as everybody else has done. And I'm just going to jump into a helmet sticker here because, again, with Cincinnati, I mean, obviously Jake Golday and Joe Royer now is joining that conversation of, you know, maybe a player that I was too low on over the summer compared to what he's doing now. And it's a player that Dane Brugler has been really high on since the summer. So maybe I missed something over the summer. But he had 5 for 63. But my first helmet sticker is going to go to Brendan Sorsby, man. I genuinely think, and again, Sorsby's is a eval that's going to write itself too, because Cincinnati has like Baylor, Utah, TCU, and BYU, the 4 of their last 5 games. So like his report's going to write itself. But my take coming into the season on Sorsby was like, man, these tools are wildly fun. The down-to-down efficiency wasn't there. Early in the season, same thing. The Nebraska game, week 1, is awful. These last 3, Iowa State, UCF, and now Oklahoma State, you see the fun tools. The quick game is way more efficient. And that's the stuff that really moves me, is when like you know where you're going with the ball pre-snap, you hit your back foot, ball comes out. And then again, Sorsby's a good athlete too. So then on top of that, he's doing some pretty decent stuff outside of structure when he has to escape and has to get out of there. I've been told that the NFL likes this guy. So I think, again, give it a couple weeks. We might be having a conversation that he might jump into that conversation. Not like the top tier conversation, but like the Jackson Dart January riser conversation. Because the tools are there. The build is there at 6'2". He's listed at 6'3", 230. So I would assume he's probably like 6'2", 225, which is still a pretty decent build for how good of an athlete and how good of an arm he has. And how flexible an arm he has. So like, and his pocket movement skills, dude, are silky smooth. Like he is a smooth operator in the pocket as well. So like Sorsby has been moving me the past few weeks here to the point where it's like, I'm ready to maybe, again, give it 2 weeks. And I might be ready to have a pretty strong conversation about Brendan Sorsby.
Yeah, I was intrigued with him over the summer. I think I watched him when I was like guest hosting this. And then I watched him for an episode that I didn't even end up recording. But yeah, I was impressed with his natural talent. It was just kind of sloppy and didn't feel convicted enough to like plant a flag on him or anything. But, you know, watching him against the bad competition that they played earlier in the season, I was really impressed. I haven't circled back the last 3 games. I mean, there was some... might have been Bowling Green or something. Outstanding game. But yeah, I haven't watched the last 3 games. Need to check that out. In fact, it's going to be the next game that I watch probably.
If you are a paid subscriber to the Daft on Draft Substack, I did a film room on it this morning as well. By the time this episode comes out yesterday. But all right. So we each have 1 helmet sticker down. James, who's your next helmet sticker here?
So my next helmet sticker, I'm going to go with Texas Tech linebacker Jacob Rodriguez. The one caveat I will say is that he had a coverage bust in this game. It wasn't perfect, but I think the impact that he made in the run game offset whatever issues he had in coverage. Six stops, nine tackles, two forced fumbles. Jacob Rodriguez has a 96.8 PFF run defense grade, which basically means you force a lot of fumbles. But, you know, I do have some questions about him in coverage. He's made good plays on the ball. Like, he had that one interception earlier in the season that was really nice. But the coverage awareness, I worry about a little bit. But he is so smart in the run game, reads his keys consistently. He can shed blocks, physical tackler. I think, did you say like Malcolm Rodriguez?
Yeah, from the Lions, Oklahoma State.
I kind of see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where you have him, but I'm getting increasingly higher on Jacob Rodriguez the more I watch of him.
Yeah, I really like him. The size and athleticism profile makes me think that he's probably a day three pick. But again, like, day three linebackers make it all the time.
Yeah.
So I'm like not writing him off even to say like, oh, I think this guy's probably a day three pick. But I really like Jacob Rodriguez. Even some of his coverage drops are really interesting to me. Like are really nice to me as well.
I don't think it's as much of a limitation in coverage, like where he's an early down player only or anything. He just makes a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say probably a day three player, but a guy that I would absolutely love on my football team. A guy that I would absolutely love on my football team. I gave him a helmet sticker a couple weeks ago, too. So just a really rock solid player. Really nice eyes. Really good read react. And again, linebacker is one of those positions you can overcome. Like, linebacker and running back are the two where, like, you could be fast, but if your eyes are slow, you're slow. You can be slow, but if your eyes are fast, you're a decent player. Like,
yep.
So, yeah, I like Jacob Rodriguez. All right. For my second helmet sticker, I'm going to give it a helmet sticker to a guy I've already given a helmet sticker to once this year, and that's going to be UConn wide receiver Skylar Bell. So I gave Skylar Bell a helmet sticker after the Syracuse game when UConn blew the lead, then forced overtime because, like, Skylar Bell exclusively on the final drive of the game willed them into field goal range to force overtime. But Skylar Bell against Boston College put up 10 catches for 125 yards and a touchdown. Skylar Bell has played two games against Power Four competition. Skylar Bell's best two of his three best games have been in those two games as a UConn receiver. And that means something from an evaluation and a scouting perspective to me, that you are elevating against those bigger opponents. They beat Boston College in this game as well. So again, Boston College has been in kind of a rough spot for a little while. I get it, but it's a P4 opponent for an independent school that was an FCS school a few years ago. So like, it means something to do this. So I apologize, they weren't an FCS school, but an independent school, like low level competition.
I was racking my brain. I'm like, what?
No, they weren't. That was my bad. But and again, in this game, he kind of showed he's a slot receiver. Like, he's a slot receiver. It is what it is. He could probably play some Z too. In this game, he had a really beautiful over route where he stacked the defensive back and snapped it back off and created some separation. He took a screen to the house. And then he had, I think he got targeted on a deep ball. He got open and he got overthrown as well. But like, I thought he showed every level of the field in this game as well from a receiver perspective. So probably a 4.56 athlete, like 4.56 athlete. I've heard he's going to jump well, but like he's not overly explosive on tape, but he's really refined, really, really well-rounded. Again, one of those guys that's going to go third through fifth round range somewhere in there, but like a mid round receiver. But like, this is a guy that I think is going to be a decent slot receiver at the NFL level. And again, he's elevating against the best level of competition that UConn has faced this year. So Skylar Bell gets my second helmet sticker.
I really like Skylar Bell. I've only watched him when you have given him a helmet sticker, but the two games that I've watched have been outstanding. My final helmet sticker is going to go to a player that I've mentioned in passing several times on this show, and that's Zaki Wheatley, Penn State safety. So I am not like voluntarily watching Penn State, but they do play other teams that I'm interested in. So I will be watching Penn State. And what I've seen from them this year, Zaki Wheatley is one of the only players that like consistently brings it from just an effort and physicality standpoint. Had another outstanding performance. Really, this is kind of like a season-long achievement award almost for Wheatley, just because he's consistently holding it down. But he had a crazy one-handed interception, mm-hmm. a ton of tackles. I mean, he's constantly making plays near the line of scrimmage. And like, we'll get into some Penn State defensive linemen probably with one of your helmet stickers, but you watch how the front four plays, and then you watch how Zaki Wheatley plays. They must be having like two different pregame speeches.
Yeah. He's a fun player. This is the safety class. If you need a safety man, this is the year. Yes. Grab one. Downs, McNeil Warren, Ramsey, Wheatley. Again, I shouted out Jelani McDonald last week from Texas, and I thought he looked like the best player on the defense again this week. So it's shaping up to be a pretty strong safety class.
All right. Sure. And I would put, Thieneman, Genesis Smith out of Arizona. I like AJ Halsey out of LSU. You've got Amari Farrell from Indiana. Like, yeah, it's a really solid class.
Yeah. All right. My third and final helmet sticker here is going to be a player that you've mentioned a lot on the podcast, but I thought he had a really strong week. And that's on the opposite end of the Penn State game here is Iowa guard Cade Piper. So you've mentioned on the podcast that his tracking data is among the best of interior offensive linemen this year. And I think it shows up on tape, man. I think he's a really smooth climber to the second level. His hips swivel really well. So like when he is walling off rush lanes or when he is scooping out blockers or scooping out defensive linemen from a gap away, like you can see that fluidity. You can see that athleticism on display. I don't think he's overly strong, overly physical, but like I think his core strength is good enough to recover. Like there were a few reps in this game where it looked like he was about to get tossed and then re-anchored, like kind of like reset and then was able to anchor down. And so that recoverability, I think, is really important, and Cade Piper showed it in this game. You're right about the Penn State defensive line. Again, some guys we came in really high, like Zane Durant came in with moderate expectations on, denied Dennis Sutton, moderate expectations on. Like, they're not playing good football. But again, like, Cade Piper was frequently at the second level. Cade Piper was frequently, like, even, like, Moulton, the running back, would bounce and then bounce and then bounce. So, like, the Iowa offensive lineman had to kind of continue to bounce with him. And I thought, like,
eyes on the back of his head.
Yeah. And I thought Piper had, like, was able to climb with him, to redirect with him, and just continue through the rep until the whistle blew. So I thought it was a really impressive game for Cade Piper in this one.
Yeah. I watched Iowa's offensive line a couple hours ago, and so four of them are on my radar, not the left tackle, but I thought all four of Iowa's offensive linemen that are draft eligible had really solid performances. Jennings Dunker, who I just don't see it with him, but like he's a solid college run blocker. Cade Piper, like you mentioned, Logan Jones, undersized zone center. The Iowa guard that I actually really like is
Bo Stevens. Okay.
And I considered giving him a helmet sticker. Like, he had one of the most dominant one-on-one, like, O-line versus D-line performances in the run game against Zane Durant. He had this dude in hell. It was like every single play he was stuffing his face in the turf. And to me, I think that he has a much like broader frame. I feel better about him anchoring, protecting his edges in pass pro, but watching any of them work those zone combos is beautiful.
It is. It is indeed. What bothers me about a couple of the Iowa guys, for one, Bo Stevens's arms are 31 and a half.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But Logan Jones, for athletic as he is, I think he really struggles to cross face consistently. Like, he really struggles to cross face in, like, those wide zone looks.
Really?
I think so.
I felt like he had a couple nice reach blocks in this game.
Yeah. From what I've seen, it's like, yeah, but I want you to get across. So I'll keep an eye on it. Do you think any of these guys are above a day three pick? Any of those three interior guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think Cade Piper is like a top 50 pick. But I don't, like, it would shock me if he declared this year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he snap for snap is such an elite run blocker. Now, he has a low sample size of snaps, so that mm-hmm. has to continue. But everything I've seen from him in the run game has been outstanding. Watch his tape last year. It's like, okay, this dude is clearly an underclassman in pass pro. And this year, he looks a lot more solid. Like you said, I don't think he has outstanding play strength. I think if he really faces a pro caliber bull rush, like, I would be interested to see what that looks like. But against Big Ten pass rushers, he kind of struggled last year and has been really solid this year. And it's really just like, you got to get that pass pro up to adequate so that you can, you know, try to be one of the most dominant run blockers in the league.
Yep. Completely agree. All right, man. Do you got anything else for the people here?
I don't. It's been a long one.
It has been. It's been an hour episode here. So we'll be back again, three more episodes this week. But until next time, this has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. See ya.